the traits they have. I found those traits to be fairly normal behavior for me. I've never been tested for autism, but suspect I'm autistic. I started life handicapped. My teachers always complained that I was a daydreamer. School was extremely difficult for me. Dysfunction carries on generation to generation unless there is something to intervene. In my case, 12-step programs and recoveries have helped. Unfortunately, I did not get into them early enough to not affect my children as they were growing up. I came from a very dysfunctional family of origin and passed some of it on. My paternal grandmother was a grade-A bitch. My dad spent much of his time away from her as he could. She put him in charge of his brother, and when his brother screwed up, my dad was punished for it. He was forced to do some parenting that his mother was supposed to do. My paternal grandfather was quiet and withdrawn. He rarely spoke with me. My dad's family of origin was very dysfunctional. My dad became a workaholic as his way of coping. My maternal grandmother and grandfather, the Franks, were from German immigrants and spoke a strong accent. My grandmother greeted us at the door, said hello, and then seldom spoke with me the rest of my visit. My grandfather never greeted us kids at the door. My whole life, I don't think I ever spoke a single word with him. He lost his farm during the Depression, had a heart attack, and was fairly withdrawn after that. There were 9 children in my mom's family. They lived on my Uncle Ed's farm. They were a very close family with lots of love and conversation among them. They all had chores and worked together as a team. They raised most of their food and meat. That generation taught women that their job was to be a housewife and mother. Most decisions were made by the husband, and boundaries were limited for women. This is how my mom was raised, and she lived by it. My mom did not have any boundaries when it came to my dad and to us kids. I spent most of my growing up as emotionally abandoned. When I started kindergarten, my mom walked me across town, dropped me off, and went home. The rest of the year, I walked to and from alone. She was very pregnant at the time, so walking was limited for her. My dad tied himself up in finishing the home we were living in and working long hours. My mom loved gardening and had a large garden and fruit trees. She was very happy, but also very busy with her chores and being pregnant. They had little time for me. My 2 older brothers were free to play with other kids in the neighborhood, but there wasn't anyone my age. My mom got me invited to a birthday party from one of the kids' neighbors. When I arrived, he told me he didn't want me there and was rude to me the whole time. When I was about 4 years old, one of the neighbor girls who was several years older than I was, said she would be my friend if I pulled my pants down for her. We were under some pine trees beside the sidewalk. I did, but she didn't become my friend. While my pants were down, 2 older girls came by and saw me. They both laughed. I never told anyone except my counselor. I had no feelings one way or the other about the incident. I pretty much just kind of block it out and the feeling. I became very shy, a euphemism for afraid of people. I isolated myself as much as possible and avoided people any way that I could. I was very lonely and wanted attention from my parents, but was afraid of any kind of attention for fear they would see my defects. School was really extremely painful. I kept slinked down on my desk and avoided answering questions. Whenever we had to give a report, I felt like I would die as I waited to speak in front of the class. I was terrified of school and hated it. My parents moved twice each year because the resort we lived on was not insulated. I would do the first quarter of school in one school, and then the second 2 quarters in another school, and then back to the first one to finish off the year. It was impossible for me to make friends with the fears that I had and constantly moving. The schools are at different places in the books. The teachers would give me extra work to see if I was up with the class. The second, 3 quarters, I was way behind the rest of the class. I struggled with reading, comprehension, and writing. I don't have the fine motor skills necessary for good penmanship. My teachers told me I was sloppy and would lower my grades based on my penmanship. If I had a B coming in math, some of the teachers would give me a C because of my penmanship. My subject and work were graded on the penmanship, not the subject. It was very discouraging, and I knew it was unfair, but I was too afraid to speak up. My parents never knew. I turned to food at a very young age as a way of feeling good. My mom always had baked goods, and I would sneak them when no one was looking. We had desserts for supper every night, and I would sneak any leftovers. At the supper table, I was always asking for second pieces of the dessert. They were usually large, so I would have two pieces. I became addicted to food for comfort and to feel good, and especially sugar. At the end of my sophomore year in high school, I was beginning to break out of my shell when my dad sold our resort and moved us 120 miles away. In my small world, that was halfway around the world. The kids in that town had grown up together, and there were strong cliques. With my fears, I withdrew even further. I was one of the last to arrive at school and one of the first to rush out at the end of the day. I was terrified, lonely, and had no confidence in myself. College was not much different. I mostly had blind dates, and they seldom went well. Fortunately, I met my wife at a party after graduating, and we dated for over 1 year. Then we married and moved to Alaska. I was very fortunate to marry her. She is the perfect mate for me. Growing up, I was not allowed to have feelings except anger. I was not allowed to have boundaries. I used anger and the bloated feelings from overeating to suppress my emotions and food to make me feel good. I, too, pulled food from the compost bucket and ate it. As a member of the Clean Plate Club and not allowed to waste anything, if it looked clean, I pulled it and ate it. Moldy food is okay to eat as long as it was not too moldy. I suffered from depression for most of my adult life. I finally went to my doctor, who was very understanding. He put me on antidepressants, and I started counseling. The counselor said that I have PTSD along with depression from severe neglect as a child. Before seeing my doctor for depression, I started to attend adult children and alcoholics meetings. Excuse me, I still vividly remember my first meeting. I was terrified. I felt like I was admitting that I was a failure and not worth much. I did not know what others would think of me. I climbed the stairs to the meeting room, and there was a doctor and a nurse at the meeting who I knew. Over the years, I've seen other doctors and nurses at the meetings, as well as legislators and people from all walks of life. Eventually, that doctor became my sponsor for a year. He helped me through my distorted views of sex, which I learned from my parents in the Catholic Church. My parents in the Catholic Church that I grew up in portrayed sex as one of the great evils of life. I was about 12 years old when my dad told me about sex. He apparently went to a dictionary and came up with the medical terms to describe it. I don't know who was more uncomfortable, my dad or me. I knew very little about my own sexuality and knew absolutely nothing about female sexuality or birth control until I was in college. I was about as naive a person as a person could get. I spent a year with a sponsor dealing with my distorted feelings about sex. The Catholic Church taught me fear and shame. Church invented things that are not in the Bible, designed to put hooks in people and control them. It has three types of sin. Original sin, which we are born with. If a baby dies without being baptized, it can't go to heaven. Quite a condemnation for a baby from a loving God. Second was mortal sin, guarantees a place in hell for a person unless they confess it to a priest. We were taught we had to go to a priest and to depend on him for salvation. We could not go directly to God. Apparently, God needs help to forgive sins. Venial sin is a minor offense that puts us in purgatory to burn for a while until we have suffered enough to earn heaven. When I finally realized that the Catholic Church is dysfunctional, controlling, and hypocritical, I left and began attending the Presbyterian Church. I felt very guilty and like I was committing a sin. Eventually, I came to realize I had made the right decision and became a member of Chapel by the Lake. That made me a, quote, a fallen Christian, or a fallen Catholic, unquote. Considered a derogatory term by Catholics, people like me. As a Catholic, I was, quote, religious. When I joined the 12-step program, I became spiritual. I now have a relationship with God and no longer feel abandoned. Spiritual versus religious. Like all addictions, it takes practice to stay abstinent. Initially had a list of foods to avoid. It worked for a while, but when my weight plateaued, I needed to take the advice of the program and come up with a food plan and got a sponsor. I had resisted it for several years because I was taught not to ask for help. My food plan is an Excel spreadsheet with formulas that calculate the calories and other factors as I add them in. This allows me to plan my breakfast, lunch, and supper meals. I have many foods that are healthy, tasty, and satisfying. I send my food plans to my sponsor. This is part of my contract, the abstinent. Only works if I am honest with my sponsor. I learned slowly in OA and resisted the tools, but I learned and eventually used. My family of origin rules kept me from depending on the program and the sponsor. Here are several things that are facts for me. A food plan works for me. I've had slips, but abstinence does take practice. I immediately start again, and I confess to my sponsor. I have to be honest, to be abstinent. Second, we truly are bound together by our weakness. I think it helps me to know that I'm not alone with my addictions and weakness. It is comforting for me when others know what I am feeling. I'm not alone. God is love, forgiveness, and accepting. When I look back over my life, God has never abandoned me, not even once. He, she has kept me out of a lot of trouble. It took me about 25 to 30 years of 12-step programs to finally turn my life over to God. My sponsor said, don't carry on a conversation with food. I will always lose if I do. For me, I can't resist some foods if they are in my house. So I don't buy them. I don't eat sweets. I have no control over them when I eat them, so I don't start. For me, it's easier not to start than to try to set a limit. It took me about 3 weeks to get past the cravings and into the habit of not eating them. Getting off sugar made other foods taste better. I mentally prepare myself for family get-togethers when we have a meal. I resist calling my sponsor when I'm struggling. Once again, family origin rules affect me. Don't ask for help. I'm supposed to be strong, etc. I need to start calling my sponsor when I'm struggling. That is one of the tools, and I need to use it. I must continue attending meetings the rest of my life. I have never been to a single bad meeting in over 31 years. And I became abstinent June 1st. Oh, got this wrong. What is it? 1989 it was. After over a year, I was very depressed one night and binged. I became abstinent June 1st, 2017. Over 1 year, I was very depressed one night and binged. Months later, when very depressed again, I once more binged. The lesson I learned from that was to call my sponsor. I do not have to go alone. None of us does. Two questions plagued me through the process of getting abstinent. One was why getting abstinent was so difficult. The weight loss programs on TV say it is easy to lose weight, which is a lie. Once I became abstinent, I wondered what were the reasons for success. Getting abstinent required a number of things of me. Abstinence takes practice, like any addiction. It takes multiple attempts before success is achieved. After continue attending meetings, they help through experience of others and continuing support to work the program. Getting sponsor for support and as a conscience. Looking back, getting abstinent was easier than when I was trying to become abstinent looking forward. Abstinence for me was achieved through these tools. A food plan logged the calories I was eating. It also helped me identify foods that I could and could not eat. A sponsor seems to be the key for me to finally become abstinent. It helps me keep track of my reporting food my sponsor and by being honest about eating. I don't have conversations of food. I know I want to lose. That leads to that first bite. I don't eat while driving, watching TV, reading, using the computer, or a movie. These lead to mindless eating. I sit at a table to eat. I don't think of problems while eating, or problems will trigger the desire to eat. I eat full and enjoy the food. My feelings of being full is delayed. By eating slower, I get the feeling of being full when I am full. I enjoy my food more now than when I was abstinent before. That's it. The end.
Thanks, Gary. So we can open it.
Thanks, Gary.
We can open it up for questions.
Well, once again, Barbara stands from Kowak Overeater. I don't have a question, Gary, but I am so helped by what you shared. I've just recently been struggling, well, not recently, I would say years of not being able to get abstinence again. And, you know, I'm learning it's black and white, so I'm abstinent for today, and a few days pass. So it really helps me to understand that we have challenges that everybody has, and so thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hey, Gary, this is Karen, and I really like the statement that you used, abstinence takes practice, and I was wondering if you would talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, any addiction does. You'll see commercials on TV where they tell people who are trying to quit smoking that it takes practice. And one slip-up doesn't mean you're a failure. It means that you need to start again. And it just, practice gets you into a habit, and then you stick with that habit. It's just like anything else. Bad habit of smoking or eating or drinking, you have to overcome that, and that takes patience. You just keep practicing it and practicing it, and eventually you get it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Gary, this
Hi,
is...
Hi, Gary. It's Bonnie. And,
Hi, Bonnie.
I'm sorry. I was late. I was calling the Juno Saturday meeting instead of Ketchikan, but I thought, oh, that's all I have to do to have a consistent abstinence, do a spreadsheet, and I don't know how to do a spreadsheet, but there are so many ways to stay abstinent, and at the end of your sharing, you said the end, but it's not the end. Was the beginning of your life, and it continues to be your positive life. So, no, it's not the end. And I bought a food that wasn't sugar, but I said I wouldn't have it in my house. So what I have left, I can just throw away. And I'll let my sponsor know on that. It's a great day today, obviously. And I'm on my deck. And so it's my first day on my deck. And I have my little start plants out here with me. And a few have come up. And, there's so much I can do to have a consistent abstinence, and you gave me some reason to try that, and I think more than anything, it's being more in touch with my sponsor. and doing more writing. So thank you, Jerry. Gary, your story was inspiring, and well, it was a very special story. Thank you.
Thanks. I've learned to not shop when I'm hungry, because I end up looking at something and having a conversation and wanting to buy it. And that's one of the rules that they tell you about in pamphlets. Don't shop when hungry.
Thanks. Gary, I had a
money that way too.
So this is Leslie, Gary, and I had a question about, you said something about you changed from being religious to spiritual, and sounded like you had a lot of shame and guilt, and that it was kind of a slow process to unhook from all that. Can you describe or explain a little bit how that happened?
It was. I was coming out of church on Sunday when I was going to the Catholic Church, just angry and frustrated and not feeling good. And I'd spend the whole week that way and then go to church the next Sunday and come out the same way again. And I finally just accepted the fact that that was not for me, regardless of what my upbringing was. The Catholic Church uses fear and shame to control people. And of course, I was fear and shame based, so they had quite a bit of control on me. When I finally joined the Presbyterian Church, I felt really guilty. I felt like I was sinning and evil and bad and all the negatives. It took a while before I realized that it was much healthier there than it was at the Catholic Church. When I got into the program, I went through the 12 steps. There were, I don't know, about 20 of us. We formed two or three groups. They call them family groups, which was, I thought was strange until I realized that you become like a family and become really close. And somebody one night said that he had learned to become spiritual rather than religious. And it was at that point that I realized that with spirituality, you have a close relationship with God. You turn your life over to God. With religion, you don't have to do that. You just go to church, go through the motions, and you're there with everybody else. But that close relationship isn't there. The Catholic Church taught me to fear God, not to love God and accept God. So I realized over the years that God is loving, God is forgiving, and has been with me my whole life. Never once in all my years has God ever let me down or abandoned me. So now I have a personal relationship with God, which is spiritual, versus just the actions that you have as being a religious.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi, this is Cindy from Ketchikan.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Thank you so much for sharing today. I have a question regarding, I wonder if you would speak more to, you said that your family of origin instilled in you that you shouldn't reach out for help. And that's certainly myself as well as some other loved ones I have that won't even reach out to a 12-step program who are in need of it. And I just don't know what to say to them and myself, who, although I have joined, it's hard for me. It's hard for me to take part, to share, to actually think about having to go somewhere else to get help from someone else rather than just for myself. So how did you make that transition?
It was kind of a slow process. I think one big thing that helped me was my one brother helped me put on a new roof for my garage. It got to the point where I couldn't do it by myself. And I asked if he would help me, and he did. He was happy to do it, and we spent 3 days doing it. I think at that point I realized that I help other people when they ask, and yet I was afraid to ask other people for help. So if it's okay for me to help other people, it's okay for other people to help me. And I found that when I do ask for people for help, they're quite happy to do it. And I think that's just who we are as humans. We need to help each other. My kids ask for help. My wife asks for help. My brothers ask for help. So I have a right to expect help from other people. And if they say no, that's fine. But we do need help from other people. That's one of the reasons I stay in the program. I can't stay absent by myself. I never will. I don't have any control over the food, and I never will have that control. So I need the help of going to meetings and the sponsors. And that's the way it is.
Thank you.
Hi, Gary, this is Elisa in Ketchikan. Thank you for your share. That was really good. Do you use writing at all during the day?
I rarely use writing, but I spend a lot of time every day talking with God, telling God what my problems are. I thank God for every little thing that happens to me, including I kind of joke about it at the Wednesday meetings that my one brother said, expect a closed parking space to all the stores. And so I started doing that, and I found that I do. And when I find a closed parking space, I say thanks to God. Sometimes at a red light, it's a good time to pray to God. It's amazing how short red lights are when you start praying to God.
Thank you.
Anybody else have a question for Gary? Okay, so thank you, Gary, for sharing your story. And I will stop the recording, and then we could just open it up for sharing. That's all right with you.